The date is April 5th, 2022. You should be doing your taxes, but instead you're going to listen to this episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. This episode, number 132, we got two interviews coming your way this week. One with the great Jack Knight, who headlines our main showroom April 21st to the 23rd. And then another interview with Rob Mayer and Joe Robinson, the masterminds behind Die Laughing Productions, who are presenting their 90s-themed murder mystery at the club on April 20th. 420, baby. But first, some big news! The DC Improv turns 30 this year, and we have finally announced our birthday party. As a matter of fact, it's a party so big, the DC Improv can't hold it. On June 27th, that's a Monday night, we are taking over the great 930 Club right here in the district to present the Goddamn Comedy Jam. The way this show works, comics take the stage, tell a funny story, then sing a song related to that story, rocking out with a live band. They do this at all the big comedy festivals. It's a huge hit. And check out the lineup we have confirmed so far. Tony Rock, Christian Finnegan, Red Grant, Tony Woods, Jessica Kirsten, Rachel Feinstein, Adam Ray, Josh Adam Myers, Steve Byrne, DJ Set from Cypha Sounds, and I am 100% positive I'm forgetting some people in there. Go check it out at dcimprov.com for the full lineup, all the details, and most importantly, the ticketing link. Again, that's the Goddamn Comedy Jam, June 27th at the 930 Club, celebrating 30 years of the DC Improv. It's going to be the comedy party of the year, so make sure you're going. But now, on to the idle chit-chat. Like I said, we got two interviews for you this week. Jack Knight, then Rob Mayer and Joe Robinson from Die Laughing Productions. And we start with Jack. We have had Jack Knight headline our lounge showroom in the past, but April 21st through the 23rd, it's Thursday through Saturday, he'll be in our main showroom for the very first time. If you haven't heard of Jack before, well, you should. He's a really fascinating guy, incredibly funny guy. He grew up in Seattle and really launched his comedy career in Los Angeles. He's a great stand-up, but he's also been a writer and a contributor to some very critically acclaimed, buzzworthy shows. For example, he was a writer and voiceover worker for Big Mouth on Netflix, the John Mulaney, Nick Kroll show. Right now, he is writing for Pause with Sam Jay on HBO Max. And he is also one of the creators and stars of the Peacock series Bust Down. It came out at the start of March, and it's been getting rave reviews. It stars Jack, Chris Redd from Saturday Night Live, Sam Jay, and Langston Kerman. All of them very good friends, and they all play employees at a casino in Indiana. Just a funny, silly, different show. Kind of cool. Six episodes all on Peacock right now. Go check it out. We got a hold of Jack last week while he was working in New York. Have a listen. We are joined now by Seattle's best, Jack Knight. Jack, how you doing?
Hello. I'm walking down the streets of New York, and I'm scared.
And scared? Scared why?
I don't know. New York is just like one of those cities that, like, if a brick were to fall off a nigga, like, balcony and hit you in the head, it's your fault. You shouldn't have been walking in that area. you got to kind of keep your head in a swivel.
So you're living in New York now, right?
No, I'm out here working on Sam Jay's show, right. Pause with Sam Jay. We're on season two. I think it comes out in May. Yeah,
so at least temporarily you're there. And I bring up Seattle because you've mentioned this before in other interviews, how you come from a part of the country where a lot of people don't always expect black people to come from, but now you're on the East Coast, you're in L.A. a lot. What is it about Seattle that makes your perspective a little bit different on just in the comedy world?
We definitely have a lot of, you know, East Africans and you know, black people from all across the world in Seattle. I don't know if we have as many African-Americans as, like, the South might have. But it just Seattle is such a weird Twin Peaksy ass place where you feel like it's like a surreal dream every single day. And so when you are as absurd as someone like me, the place reflects it in a way that isn't like LA or Houston or Atlanta or, you know, these black metropolises. It reflects it in a way of like you'll go somewhere and you'll do something that you think is normal, and then someone will be like, "Well, did you ever think about putting, you know, Fruity Pebbles on a donut?" And you're like, "Where am I?"
That's an amazing example that you just pulled out of thin air. There, very well done.
You know what I'm saying? But like, it's like when you just burst in absurdity as like a person, a minority of any type, queer, woman, whatever the fuck. When you're in a place that is so absurd and you try and exist and reflect it, you are just gonna become an id. You're just gonna become like a cracked frame in this reality. So yeah, Seattle's weird. Dude.
I mean, do you think that ethic, I mean, you talk about doing silly or absurd stuff. Is that kind of the ethic that you think pervades your stand-up? It's part of what I love when I watch you on stage, but is that something that just kind of, it's baked into you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with a lot of these comedians that keep telling us that we're like these bastions of truth and like these superheroes that go and tell the world what really needs to be done. So why do we need to be like, outside of Bill Burr, not everyone is ugly and dumb. It's such a silly job.
I noticed in the past you've also said, when people ask you like what are the things that got you into comedy, you always cite The Boondocks and Chappelle's Show. And I'm particularly interested in The Boondocks. That is the story of black kids who are growing up in basically a white neighborhood. Is that something that also sort of vibes with you? Is that kind of why you made that connection, or is it something else about the show that really spoke to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was what I was saying about the reflection of pure blackness and the absurdity of the places that they're in and how it reflects on them. Like from the revolutionary Huey Freeman, or like to just, you know, the silliest, most homophobic, misogynist Riley Freeman, and then the old school black with the pops. It's all juxtaposition and reflecting. And so I just really related to Aaron Magruder, Rodney Barnes, Carl Jones, those guys over there, for giving like a palette for, you know, black ideas to kind of play. And so hopefully, you know, with our show Bust Down, we do the same.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a second. I'm curious, have you ever had a chance to meet Aaron Magruder?
No, I tried to have a meeting. I met Rodney Barnes. I'm cool with Carl. I tried to meet Aaron, and then we were going to go to lunch, and then I showed up and he didn't come. And then my people reached out to his people and they're like, why? And he said he forgot. And I was like, that's fair.
I used to work for the Washington Post. I used to work for newspapers when The Boondocks was coming up as a comic strip before it was a cartoon. And
those were amazing.
Yeah. And it was an interesting thing because he was, particularly when you talk to guys who were in charge of the comic strip department and getting him and distributing him, he was just such a different breed of cat that a lot of people didn't know how to deal with them. You know what I mean? Yeah, there weren't comic strip artists working like he was working. And it was kind of like a weird clash of cultures. But it was interesting. I mean, clearly it was a huge hit. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a thin line between being a genius to being an asshole. So I'm happy he got his work out because that work inspired me and so many of my friends.
Where do you fall on that line between the genius and the asshole side? Which part of the line are you on? Do you ever think about
it? I'm a dumbass. I'm on a whole different side of the I don't matter. I don't want to ever have any position of authority or power. I just want to run around like a rubber chicken in one hand and like a water gun in the other, and then, you know, have a kid.
Awesome. I do want to ask you, you mentioned Bust Down. Obviously, you're coming to the Improv April 21st, 23rd for stand-up, but you have this awesome project.
Sir.
Awesome project that just came out, Bust Down on Peacock. All 6 episodes out now if people want to go watch it. I've also seen you say in the past that, you know, you had a couple goals, you know, short-term goals. This was maybe a couple years ago. Say you want to do 30 minutes on Netflix and you wanted to do a show with friends. This definitely qualifies as your show with friends, because it's what it's you,
yeah,
Chris Red, Sam Jay, and Langston Kerman.
Chris Red,
yeah, right.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a dream. It's a dream project come true, and I am still in awe that they let us do any of that. Like, it's nothing. You know, all love and is to Universal, NBC, Peacock, Lauren, all those guys. Because you're just talking about like the cultural differences. It's like they didn't. It could have been written in Russian how far we were away from their culture with every single joke and every single idea. And they just trusted us enough to be like, I mean, if y'all think it's funny, fine. And it turned out that people liked it. And that's very nice.
Yeah, it has gotten a lot of very nice write-ups since it came out. When did it come out? Beginning of the month, right? Beginning of March, something like that?
Yeah, March 10th.
Yeah. So take us back for a sec. You said you get to work with friends. These, at least the four core characters, you guys are all buddies. Mm-hmm. You've all worked together. You're all basically listed as co-creators and the primary writers of the show. There's a couple other writers on there as well, but you guys are the bulk of the writing. How far back do you guys go? Because I know, I mean, obviously you meet people in the comedy world, but how far back do you go with Chris and Sam and Langston?
Chris and Langston I met at the JFL Comedy Festival maybe like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And like we had a killer class. It was us three, Clayton English, who's like at 85 South.
Yeah,
show,
we just had him at the club a couple
like
weeks
on,
ago.
On yeah. Hawkeye, yeah. Yeah. Ashley Barnhill. I think Dulce was our year. It was just like a crazy year, and everybody's doing very well. And I'm happy. It was, and that's where I met those two. And then I met Sam at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. I don't know if you remember that. It was in Portland. And we just hit it off. Me, her, Josh Johnson all hung out. Yeah, and then I just became really close with all of them individually. And I'm a very lazy person, and I like being annoying. So I wanted to annoy all of them at once instead of individually text them what my annoying idea is. And so I put them all in a group text where they really didn't know each other as well. And I was like, hey, all y'all friends now. And now they're all very, very close friends, and we're all going to each other's weddings and having beautiful times.
That's nice. The power of the group text. And you can take full credit for starting the group text. That's the most important thing.
I mean, credit is a bad word, but yeah.
When they're arguing over residuals for everything you guys do together, I think you get first claim. That's probably right. Yeah.
I think that they'll argue that to their death.
So you mentioned that Peacock, NBC Universal, whatever, gave you guys a lot of latitude in what you're trying to do. Now, when you kind of have that sort of freedom, that can go a couple mm-hmm. ways. Did you guys have a very specific vision for kind of the tone or the vibe you wanted of this show? Or was it something that just kind of organically happened as you're putting the episodes together?
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of having so many EPs and creators. Everyone has the same level of input, so you can hold one another accountable when something's corny, when something's too far, when something isn't as funny as it could be. There's always someone that you respect in the room. And this goes along with the other writers that are attached to Zach Fox's of the world, Gary Richardson's, Emmy Blotnick's. There was no ego. There was no, you know, hierarchy in the room. Everybody was as funny as everybody else. And so if someone's like, I'm not feeling this, You gotta take that for what it is and try and understand how to make them feel it better.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people describe it as, like you had mentioned, absurd or silly, that it is a show that takes on a lot of subjects that are, you know, modern society type stuff. Not irrelevant problems, but it's not a Seinfeld show about nothing, but at the same time, deals with a lot in a very silly way. And you sound like that's your vibe. So, I mean, it sounds like you achieved kind of what you wanted. Is that the same wavelength everyone else is on as well?
Chris and Langston, for sure, they're silly Billy. Sam thinks of herself as she's just smarter than us. she's just more of a complete picture. She's just more, you know what I mean? Like, and you never know. Everyone's going to evolve. You never know. Chris might be a Macbeth in 2 years, and Langston might be an astrophysicist. I don't really believe in people staying the same. Hopefully I evolve, but as of now, I'm still the same dude that thinks slipping and falling and cum is funny.
It's just the context. That's all. It really depends on how it's happening. Right.
I'm approaching 30 here. I'm 28 years old. I thought, like, man, I bet you my 28 year old brain is going to be thinking about other stuff than slipping and falling and cum. And I sit before you the same man.
There's a scene you're mentioning. There's a scene you can find online where it's you crawling through an air duct and talking about just basically blowing a load all over the place. Like Bruce Willis. Yeah, Bruce Willis style in Die Hard. And I was like, that's how great that even if you never worked another TV project in your life, you got to do the classic crawl through an air duct scene at the very least, right? In addition to doing the writing for this and, writing and producing all that other stuff, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, this is probably your biggest acting gig to date. You've done a lot of voiceover work. You've done some live action stuff, but this is probably your biggest role as an actor, right?
I mean, I wouldn't call it acting. I was just myself.
And all the characters, in the show have the same names as you guys. Yeah, right. So.
Yeah, we didn't, to call us actors is truly a waste of everyone's time. Everybody else, Freddie Gibbs was an actor. we were saying what we said before on camera.
You're giving yourself no credit as an actor at all whatsoever?
Absolutely, absolutely zero credit.
So no training, no nothing, no, no.
Yeah. Nah, we just roll out of bed and be like, yo, you know what'd be funny? This. And then we just talk about that.
But you still got to hit your mark. It's TV production, right? You still got to hit your marks. You still got to deliver it and make sure the angles all set. I mean,
But like we got to stop this whole thing that, like, as a person who's now acted, these people are losers. The job's not that hard. Like, I now know. And now when like that, the Oscars shouldn't even happen. There shouldn't be Emmys. Every award should go to people below the line. Acting is truly some of the stupidest, biggest waste of time in the world. Like, eventually we're going to get to the point where we're just going to have, like, AIs do it. So, like, let's just stop this game.
We'll all be out of work, though. I mean, you don't want that. Come on. You can't possibly want AIs.
I write. So I'll always be able to have a job. But the rest of these motherfucking pretending silly billies, like, motherfuckers would be going to classes to learn to be a dragon. Nah, man. I ain't supporting that.
So you've been in a bunch of different writing rooms. For people who don't know, you've written for Blackish, you've written for Big Mouth, you've written for a couple other shows as well. How different is the writing room when, you know, basically three of the writers are the co-creators of the show and very good friends of yours? Is it a different vibe, different work ethic, or is it just kind of the same?
You got to respect each other's superpowers and assist each other's weaknesses. That's all I'll say.
So what's your superpower?
I'm probably one of the better absurdists in the room. I'm like the craziest person in the room. Sam is Sam. You know Sam's work. You know Chris's work. You know Lang's work. And it's like, if you play your role very, very well, everyone's going to rise to the occasion and play their role very, very well. And so it's just synchronized swimming, or like those row teams in white colleges where, if you just all are doing what you're supposed to do, the product comes out real well. But you have to respect everybody's superpower. Yeah. And when someone's superpower is being shown, you have to be like, you got it, dog.
So working on the show, I mean, I would think like all these things, whatever your expectations are going in, aren't always the same as you're in the process of it. You learn new things about, say, yourself or the other people around you. Did you find any skills you didn't think you had as you're kind of working on putting the show together, or any talents that you were impressed with yourself as you were putting the show together?
I didn't know I was patient. I thought I was such like a dickhead, like I want things to go my way type of dude. And then you get into like the writer's room and someone, you know, or you get on set and something's happening and you're not really fucking with it, but you're like, you know what? I'm gonna just let this rock out for another 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then that person or that department eventually is like, hey, this don't work. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have told you an hour ago, but I didn't, because I want you to, you know, got it.
Get it out. Yeah, right. I'm also kind of curious. So a lot of stand-ups, in terms of people getting into writing and production and working on projects outside of stand-up, a lot of stand-ups kind of go stand-up for a couple of years and then sort of fall back into writing. I got the impression that you, from the jump, have always kind of wanted to do both and have done both. From, you know, your career's not that old. You've had a chance to work on a lot of great shows. You've also had a chance to do a lot of great stand-up. Is that something that you kind of want for yourself, kind of going forward, as you go into your 30s, as you go into your 40s, do you want to be doing both of these things, or do you ever see yourself shift into one side or the other?
I don't think you can pick one anymore. I think everything is like, you have to be a Swiss Army knife just to be able to pay your bills. I mean, to me, stand-up is like in a very, very odd, weird place.
How so?
Unless you're building like a centralized idea or like a personality that you can put into the ethos that is judged for just that character, it's one thing. But just responding as a dude is like not the same thing it used to be. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm not taking a step back from stand up, but I'm definitely like letting the smoke kind of clear.
Yeah.
And I can like just the amount of YouTube specials that come out, and the Netflix specials that no one even talks about anymore.
Yeah.
You gotta see what's going on. This is like the end of Motown. Maybe you gotta like understand it's time to move to Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Is it too much? Do you think? So the big thing for the stand-up was back in the 90s was that it got so, so big, and then it was the collapse. It just kind of, the bottom fell out of the market. Do you think we're near the end of another bust or coming up on another bust?
So. I think we're currently in the bust. Yeah. I remember when I first started, it was like the Hannibal Mulaney, Chelsea Peretti, Joe Mandy era.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Where it's just like motherfuckers were just smoking. Like they were just killed, like the Azizes of the world, the Donalds of the world. And I remember being like, wow, that's comedy, where you can just be like, this is the thing. And the internet evolved, Twitter evolved, everything evolved. And now everyone's just kind of like went down this line of just hiding in their groups of people, from the anti-PC people to the overly people. It's like high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you got to really like take a second and be like, all right, if everybody's doing this, I'm going to go build another thing for myself that's sustainable, and I'm going to be covered in cum.
Do you know exactly? I mean, there's so many options as to what that thing could be. I mean, obviously you always have stand up in your back pocket. You talk about these other writing projects and stuff. Is there some sort of a dream project or something that you're kind of working on that you think is just kind of the foundation for what you want to do?
Anything you can tell us about? Bust Down is definitely one. There's some animated stuff. There's some movie stuff, but you know, you don't want to blow your load, if you will. Yeah, I mean, it's just like creation is the key. Like I don't even look at stand-ups anymore. I look at Danny McBride. I look at like Francis Ford Coppola. I look at like those type of people, Larry David, where it's like the full understanding of the thing you're offering.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
When you think about like long-term projects, you know, right now you're working on all this stuff. You're collaborating with friends, putting out great product. When you're thinking, like you say, like the Larry David or the Danny McBride. Danny McBride is essentially close to the star of everything Danny McBride does. Larry David's the star of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Do you think in terms of putting together projects that are, this is the Jack Knight signature project, or is it something again where it's more collaborative for you?
Always going to be collaborative. I cussed out too many people at bars to be a star. like they'll put me top of the call sheet and the show will be canceled within like 10 minutes because there'll be a video of me like throwing a glass against the wall being like, what you mean you don't have no more pasta?
I feel like there's a space for that though. There's always something because it's like there's like the Larry Wilmore's. I know. No, but there's like the Larry Wilmore's of the world, guys who are maybe not a household name to most people, but who had their fingerprints on some stuff that was incredibly amazing. That if you really know how the comedy business works, like Larry Wilmore's a giant, and you don't, like a lot of people, like who the hell is Larry Wilmore, right? And like there's a place
there
for it.
That's the dream.
Yeah, right?
That's the dream. Yeah. That's what I want to be. I want to be the dude that was always there, but doesn't have to take responsibilities for what happened.
That's everyone's dream, really, if you want to get into it.
Yeah, I don't know why people keep running to be the stars. Like, nigga, now you got to, like, be accountable? No.
If the checks are the same size, yeah, who cares?
Right? The checks are the same size. The bitches is the same. You get to eat the same type of food. You know, the same restaurants. It's fine.
Cool. So, I know you're a busy guy, so we'll let you go in just a second. Just a couple more quick questions for you. You've been to D.C. a couple times. What do you like to do when you're here?
I love the DC Improv.
Yeah.
I love the DC Improv. I adore that place. To be honest, most of the time I go to a different bar or stay at the hotel bar before I go to do my shows. But the DC Improv is one of those locations where the staff is just as funny as the comedian. Yeah. And so many times I'll go and I'll just harass the staff because I know they're going to like either make fun of me or make fun of people walking in, or it's like, it reminds me of the Comedy Store. It reminds me of the Cellar. It reminds me of those places where like everybody knows what's going on here. This is a funny space for people to be idiots. And so when I come in and I got on goofy ass Crocs and a big ass jacket and they go, boo, I'm like, that's correct. I do look stupid. That is correct.
Excellent. Last question I'll leave you with is this. I always like to, you know, you're in show business. You know what an elevator pitch is. I always like to give people a chance to make the elevator pitch. I think I really like your show. To me, I see a lot of stand-up. Like I said, you mentioned the absurdist nature of it, the silly nature of it. That's what I think makes it great. If you are doing an elevator pitch for someone who has not seen you before, how are we convince them to come out and see you April 21 to 23 at the Improv?
If you think a pigeon with human legs is funny, come see my show.
Well, there you go. I'll be there. So
yeah, like in your head, think about a pigeon and that motherfucker got like regular Bruce Willis legs. And if you visualize that, go, that's silly as hell. Come see me. If you don't think that's funny, stay at the house, bro.
Fair enough. But I gotta think. Pigeon with human legs. That's gotta be a pretty high
that's
hit.
That's what
rate.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's
pretty
what
high
saying.
Hit, right? Or, yeah.
Bro, and if you see like a dining room table that and the first thing you think of is throwing a motherfucker through it, I'm your man.
We'll put that on all the posters. It's done and done.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, Jack, thanks for taking some time to chat with us. Really appreciate it. And we will see you in a couple weeks.
See you in a couple weeks, guys. Peace you.
There you have it. Jack Knight. Jack headlines the club April 21st through the 23rd. Again, that's a Thursday through a Saturday. 5 shows in our main showroom. You can find Jack on Instagram at JackKnight123. That's JAKKNIGHT 123. And of course, go get your Peacock subscription. Go watch all 6 episodes of Bust Down with him, Chris Redd, Sam Jay, and Langston Kerman. He is truly original. Someone I have enjoyed watching over the years. And let's face it, I'm the greatest comedy expert on the planet. So you definitely want to check him out. And now, we got even more interview. Time for a little nostalgia. Die Laughing Productions has been doing their murder mystery comedy shows at the DC Improv for a few years now. Basically, they take the tired dinner theater concept and make it way more funny and awesomely interactive. The murder mystery shows are a mix of sketch, improv, music, crowd interaction, and of course there's the game element. You can win a prize if you figure out who the killer is. We've actually had Rob Mayer on the show before to talk about it. If you want to listen to that interview, go back to episode number 100. Each Die Laughing production is built around a theme, and on April 20th, they are taking us all the way back to the 1990s. Hit me 90s one more time. Perfect for the 90s kid in all of us. Last week, I talked to Rob Mayer and Joe Robinson, the two comedians who put this whole concept together. Enjoy. We are joined now by the masterminds, the criminal masterminds, some might say, behind Die yes. Laughing Productions. It's Joe Robinson and Rob Mayer. Joe and Rob, how you guys doing?
Doing good. Great.
Hey, when you do a Zoom call, who do you look at?
Who do I look at?
I look at me.
Right now, this is unusual. Usually I kill the self view. You can actually hide it because I have the same problem. Right. I look right at my own face to make sure I don't have a double chin, that my head's not there.
I don't have a choice.
I always look at the picture I have of you, Chris White, off to my right off camera, just the framed photo I have. Your headshot signed.
Flattered and horrified at the same time. That's a very old headshot too, Rob. If you need a new one, I'm happy to send you an updated version.
No, I like this one. It's good. Yeah.
Remember me while I'm young.
Right. Yes. When I truly loved you before things took a turn.
Yeah. Speaking of nostalgia.
Yes.
We are here to talk about the upcoming murder mystery show, which is going to be April 20th at the DC Improv. 420 for those of you who celebrate that sort of thing.
There'll be some jokes about that.
There'll be some jokes. But the show is Hit Me 90s One More Time. You guys have a different theme for everyone. I've thought about it really hard, and just judging from the title, I cannot figure out what the theme of this one is. If you would care to elucidate, please, at this time. Go ahead.
It's all about the 90s. It's 90s nostalgia. We don't really say the date, but we're thinking we're like 1997-ish. So all the music is geared towards the 90s, the live performances that we do, some singing is all 90s songs. We're at a radio station event in the 90s where we're giving away Ace of Base tickets, you know, the hottest tour in the world. So it's, you know, with the nostalgia shows, it's part funny, part trying to solve the mystery, and part just enjoying, you know, reminiscing about the 90s and that time of your life, which always plays well with the crowd.
So the natural follow-up is, how was the 90s for you guys specifically? We'll start with Joe. Was this a good decade for you, a bad decade?
Yeah. Let me see. That's the year I got married to my first wife. So, I mean, there was ups and downs, right? My children were born in the 90s, so that was, you know, bad. And, yeah, I guess it was a bad decade, right? Everything was bad. I was poor, but you know, yes. I was at my funniest back then. That's not true. Now it wasn't even that either. Yeah, pretty horrible, right?
So this is a very.
This is why this is my least favorite of our murder mysteries.
It's a very traumatic show for Joe the whole time.
Yeah, it's just about our horrible lives. As
how about you, Rob?
Well, like we're more like because we have an '80s show that we've done back to the '80s, and that's, I guess that's more our nostalgia.
Yeah.
But '90s, I feel like everything that used to be the '80s theme is now the '90s theme because obviously with people getting older, you know, the Super Bowl halftime show was all, you know, just a '90s. Yeah. Halftime show. So I feel like, you know, 7-8 years ago, the go-to was the 80s. And now I think it's 90s nostalgia. It's probably going to be the most common of the nostalgia theme parties, I guess, or murder mysteries in our case.
I think,
which is fine by us.
We are all roughly the same age. I think, you know, mid 40s, correct? Right around there.
Yeah. Let's not say that.
yeah. No, mid 40s.
No, I'm 53.
Yeah.
And it's weird when I think about that because, yeah, I guess 80s is more, you know, I'm an adult in the 90s, which is not, you know, I try not to think about it. But Rob's right because when you think about the audience is usually a little bit younger than me. Mm-hmm. And so most of these, like my wife was born in the 90s as an example. Right? So this resonates more with her because she was 9 at the end of the decade. So, but yeah, I mean, anybody that's in their 40s or younger, you know, this probably resonates more the 90s do than the 80s. So, you know, and also, you know, I don't know how it's going to sound, but this is one of our best shows. I probably would say that no matter what. Right. But I actually mean it. It's one of our best shows. And so it's we love to do it because it's a lot of what occurs is plug and play, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you don't have to rely as much on what we do. It's always going to crush. And then whatever we do is just a cherry on top.
Yeah.
And we're sort of like we do with the 80s. We're kind of combining universes, you know, Saved by the Bell, Friends, X-Files, you know, Zima.
Yeah.
So, you know. In a typical murder mystery, the character is just, you know, Mr. Johnson. Doesn't mean anything. But, you know, in the 80s, we literally have a Ferris Bueller. Here we have a Slater,
yeah.
Slater in the Morning, you know, radio show, which is sort of a Saved by the Bell reference. So
here's something funny. We have
90210 references.
We have a 6-pack of Zima as a prop in this.
Where did you get it?
And I don't think this gives anything away, but somebody is killed by a poisoned Zima. That's how they die.
That only gives everything away, but sure. No.
But I have to still come. And the killer is, no, I'm just kidding. No, but I had to go and find a 6-pack of Zima. And so I remember I went up to Sparks, Maryland. Are you familiar with that?
It was one liquor store.
Yeah, one liquor store in Maryland. And we found it. It was about, without exaggeration, it's probably 140 miles round trip for me to buy. And we treat this thing because if anything happens to it, you know, we're fucked. If I'm allowed to say, I don't know. Right. So we treat it like, you know, the lost ark or whatever. I carry it with two hands and I set it. I'm so careful with it. But it's like I think it's inevitable.
It's like the Stanley Cup. We have a security guard around it at all times.
I was thinking like that, whatever the Russian beverage is, that the Chernobyl that they spill on the thing in Hot Tub Time Machine. Like if you lose this, it no longer works, right? Yeah.
Because we thought about like, you know, like a clear drink that looks like that we could change the bottle and put a new label on it. And so, but we're not
creating a label.
We're not, no, we're just keeping the original. It's hard not to drink it, though, because it looks so delicious.
There are 5 full Zimas.
Yeah.
So whenever this runs its course, that's how we'll celebrate.
That's how you're going out? That's how you're ending it all? Popping those Zimas?
That's right. Pour one out.
Until someone
when we're doing the back to the 2000s for your wife's nostalgia show.
My wife? Oh, no. My wife's 90s for sure.
I was Joe's wife.
Yes. Oh, Joe's wife.
Oh, 2010 Zimas. Yeah.
No, Allison's all about the 90s. She's going to love it. Yeah.
Well, for people who haven't seen your shows before, it's billed as a murder mystery comedy show. There's a opening act. The murder happens pretty early on, and then it's a series of it's a lot of fun stuff that's going on. There's crowd work. You guys are interacting with the audience. Little bit of sketch acting, but you're also bringing a lot of audience members up into it to deliver lines and be part of the show as well. And you're dropping clues through this whole time. There's also always, like I said, some sort of usually some sort of a musical element because you guys have some very talented musical performers. What is the what's the wheelhouse here? I mean, I know the '90s, but what are the songs? What's going into it for the '90s show?
Well, we've got some Ace of Base songs. Naturally. We've got a Sublime song, and we've got a Weird Al Yankovic a classic. And, you know, Tommy Cimbazzo and Eric Woodworth, two of our mainstays, were both, you know, legitimately good singers in their own right. Tommy's actually, I would say, an excellent singer.
Yeah.
And Eric is a good singer, but he also is just has he pulls it off. It's surprising when he can sing, and he makes it more fun than how good his voice is. Is that an insult? I think that's positive.
No, I
right?
think
it's an insult.
That's a polite way of saying that Eric takes off his clothes on a regular basis.
And that's true.
It's really a salesmanship thing more than, you know, Gypsy Rose Lee probably isn't the greatest singer in the world either, but, you know, she made it work.
Fair enough. We went over, we were lucky enough to go overseas for Armed Force Entertainment. We did some, like 2 weeks in Bahrain and Kuwait and Abu Dhabi and Djibouti, Africa, all the great places that you want to visit. And
where they love the 90s the most. Yeah. All the places.
Exactly.
Where the 90s,
yes. Really. Where they're still in the 90s in those places. And, Eric and Tommy, they're both Weird Al fans. Like fans,
like that,
know,
their Desert Island album is some Weird right. Al. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know, like, I'm a huge Prince fan, Joe. You're a huge, you know, The Who fan among you. I know you're a big Stevie Wonder fan, Chris.
Yep.
But they're like, we like those bands. They like Weird Al. Like, he's like that. Like, he's a legend. I mean, they know every single lyric, but they could just start singing these songs together and harmonize. And I'm like, wow, you guys just naturally just have this chemistry. So I said, you know, going forward, and that's about the time we were writing this 90s show, we need to incorporate you singing together. And from then on, that's sort of become a staple, and it's they have some big moments in this show.
Yeah, it was actually the second one we ever did where I think it was Justin Schlegel who said, "Hey, you know, it'd be funny is if when this happened, we everybody got on stage and we did a dance number, okay?" And we laughed about that, and like I don't want to be in a real play. I don't want to do that, but that's kind of what it's become, right? So it was this thing where these comics get together and they try to be as funny as they possibly can. And as we started adding these different elements, you know, it's funny because we'll hear people and I'll say, "Hey, have you ever been to our murder mystery?" They go, "Well, I haven't been to this one." And I sound like such a dick, and maybe it's just me, but you, Chris, these are not like a regular murder mystery, right? People don't realize that. Yeah. And yeah, they can go off the rails. And when they do, it can be so beautiful. Right. And you could literally have seen this particular show, and seeing it again, you really would see a completely different show. And you would really see some, it almost gets on the edge of where, all right, is this going to get out of hand? But it really never does, but it almost gets there. And that kind of chaos makes it, I love it. I mean, I think it's my biggest accomplishment in comedy. Rob's done a lot more than me. But guess what? I've performed stand-up on the stage of the DC Improv, and I've done a lot of things. And I do morning radio on 98 Rock, and I work for the Ravens. But this thing right here, I've never done anything better than this murder mystery.
Ah, very strong praise for your own product. Good job.
That's right. God, I'm so good, and even as good as I am, this is the best thing that I've done.
And the audience, because, you know, we have a lot of audience roles, and Joe is an expert at finding the right people to do this. Sometimes when he's not there, I have to give out the roles. And this is what happens to me when I give out a role. I see someone at a table who would be perfect. I ask her. She goes, "No." Her friend, who would be horrible at it, says, "I'll do it."
Yeah.
He would just say no.
Yeah, that's what I'm great at. Yes. I don't mind making an enemy.
Right.
I thought Rob was
so much better at that than me.
I thought Rob was going to say, "Well, actually, this is not the best thing I've ever done. That's four, but still, it's good.
This is the ninth best thing I've done today."
But those first eight are so great that this is relative.
So great.
It's all relative.
Yes.
So, you know, that's how it works.
And what happens with the audience is the roles, the rest of the audience sort of is pulling for them. So there's sort of this communal moment where, like, the audience is, we're pulling for that crowd member to say their lines, right? Or say them badly, whatever. Either way, it works. And
right,
Justin,
you can't go wrong. But it's also like, you know, and we've all done stand-up, it's like crowd work where the bar gets lowered, right? And as soon as the bar gets, it's like a cheat. But as soon as an audience member shows up there with a book, it doesn't matter what they do. If they're amazing, we come up and we'll hand them an Oscar sometimes. If they're horrible, we'll have fun at their expense. No matter what, that's usually the most fun that we have. And that's when we can hand out as many. I think this one has like eight roles. It might be one of the shows that has the most audience roles.
So if you come out, good chance you could get involved if you're coming out.
Yeah, and you don't have to do it. It's strictly a volunteer. We actually, we don't, want to make anybody do that doesn't want to.
Yeah.
We want to, you know, not too into it because then they're going to take over.
Well, that's funny you say that because we have one itch, which is a karaoke themed. And of course, we're always scared because we're afraid that people will stay away because they're like, oh, I don't want to have to sing. But it ends up everybody wants to sing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which really surprised me. You walk up to the table, do you want to sing? Yes, I do. Yeah. And they're still usually horrible, which is surprising that they want to be there and they want to sing. But that worked out.
The key to karaoke.
Remember the one time where the woman, where she dedicated the song to her son who had just died? And it was like, wait a minute, this just... This that you changed the whole vibe here. Was
what was the song? Know, like my humps? Sing. What was it?
We don't have.
Here's what happened. Yeah, some ballad or whatever. Wasn't it the
Eric Clapton song or something?
Oh God, I hope not. Tears in Heaven. I don't. Think
yeah,
that's
I think
what
it might
was.
Have been. It was real sad. But normally we don't let them sing to the end, just because from a timeline. Right?
Yeah.
But it's like, how do I interrupt this moment? Where
he hated the second verse. The show. You wouldn't want to dishonor his memory by singing that. But one thing I do remember about that is she said she wanted to sing. She came up, she dedicated it to her dead son, God rest his soul. And then when we decided who the winner was, she lost.
Yes.
It wasn't the best, hey, not by a long shot.
Sing better.
Right?
Sing better.
We play it fair here at Die Laugh.
And we haven't mentioned Justin Schlegel yet, who's basically the star of all these shows.
He's, also on a very popular morning radio show in Baltimore. Very, very funny guy. Very funny stand-up comedian. Very good radio host. And does an excellent job. He's always kind of the detective character in this show.
Yeah.
So, quarterback.
We almost have the same way of becoming the detective. He's not usually an actual detective. He's just in the wedding theme show. He's the wedding planner. Well, clearly the wedding planner has to figure it out. Yeah. You know? So it's, you know, the radio DJ in this case, you know, it's my show. So he always just sort of turns into the detective. And he's great at a lot of things. And I feel like it's like you can really hit a fastball as well as anyone in the world. And this show, we're just going to keep throwing you fastballs.
Right.
It's like,
right.
It's just in his wheelhouse for him just to be everything that he's great at all wrapped into one. And in every show with him is completely different because he can go off on crazy tangents. And
oh, yeah.
He's worth the price of admission himself.
They're a lot of fun. And particularly for these pop culture theme shows, he's a walking encyclopedia of pop culture references and things like that. That he's got, he can pull that out of thin air so pretty easily. All right. 90s speed round here, guys. A lot of people, if you say you're characterizing the 80s, they might say that's the greed decade or something like that. There's all kinds of ways they characterize it. How would you guys characterize the 90s, if you were trying to come up with one or two words to really put it in its place? We'll start with Joe. How would you do it, Joe?
I mean, isn't grunge the first thing that people usually think of when they think of the 90s? That, and then obviously those are the Clinton years if you look at things through a political lens. So that's usually what I see. Remember, because I'm 53, I was an adult in the 90s. Yeah. And so I don't really romanticize the 90s like I do the 80s. But still, and maybe this is bad, like I intimately know Saved by the Bell.
That is bad.
Right? But I'm an adult, but I know it. I know every character. I remember when Jesse had the drug problem. Like, I remember all this stuff. And I don't know what that means. What am I, 30 when I'm watching this? Whatever. Anyway, you get it.
I've watched some bad TV in my day, but I have never watched a full episode of Saved by the Bell. And every time I've tried, I cannot figure for the life of me why it has any kind of loyal following at all. It's horrible. Anyway,
no, you're probably right, but I also watched like the knockoffs. Like I watched Hang Time, which was like Anthony Anderson. It was like a ripoff of
it.
I saw them all. I don't know. And then started thinking that God, what? I guess I was like 26, and I'm watching these. It's probably illegal.
If it's not, it illegal, should be.
Yes.
It
you're
should
on a watch
be.
List.
I mean, it's frowned upon for sure. Okay.
You, Rob, what do you think?
I think internet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think reality TV. I think Real World. I think that became a thing. So I think it started counterculture, I guess, with grunge and anti what the 80s is. But then it turned into, you know, internet and reality TV, which seems very like a set natural progression from the 80s.
Yeah. I was born at tail end of 1976. So I was basically teenager to finishing college at the end of the 90s. Mm-hmm. That's like just starting in like so. 21 basically by the end of the, you know, right around the end of the decade. And that's, to me, it's, I always think of internet. I think of sitting in my dorm room downloading Netscape 1.0 yep. for like an hour and a half and being like, this is going to be great. It's going to be amazing.
And it was, eventually, it was great.
We have we also have a pager in this show, which had to buy off eBay.
Did you get it from the Zima guy? Did you just like the...
I wish. If they sold it in the same spot, that would have been a lot. You know, but now that I'm thinking about it, seriously, we probably should have some backups for these. They're going to be impossible to find and get, right? Especially the Zima.
Yeah.
We should have more than one pager. That's true. Yeah.
All right.
We have Zima. We'll figure it out.
So that's characterizing the 90s. Your favorite 90s band or least favorite 90s band? I'll take either one. Yeah, we'll start with Rob this time.
Favorite 90s band. I mean, I mean, I like the Dr. Dre Snoop Dogg whole thing coming into. Right. I mean, that was, I think that's, to me, that's, you know, I guess you could, to me, it's that or like a Nirvana Pearl Jam that epitomizes the 90s.
Did you like the halftime show? The Super Bowl halftime show?
I mean, I did like the halftime show. I felt like, I don't think it was, you know, when people start saying it's the best ever, then the Prince fan in me comes out and I start to attack it.
Purple Rain in the Rain was pretty amazing.
Yes. That's always going to be epic to me. But I mean, I thought everybody killed it pretty much. So it was pretty good. Yeah.
Joe, what do you think?
I guess, I mean, back then was like the HFS days. So I guess I liked the Pixies back then. And then I guess the Smiths were done by then. So I guess Morrissey. But that was more in my genre, The Cure.
He's cooler than me.
Most of the music in the Hit Me 90s One More Time, it's all Morrissey and The Cure. It's a real pick-me-up show.
You don't hear any of that. We don't play one of those. All these songs, like, I never listened to this.
You'll be slitting your wrist dials. It'll be great.
There's a lot of, we got some Mariah Carey in there, you know, some Naughty by Nature. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to mention them, but as a huge fan.
Yeah. Well, who wasn't?
Oh, Hanson. Hanson is prominently.
There's definitely some Hanson,
Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right.
So I do like the song Mbop for sure. Yeah. I do. Matter of fact, we did a segment recently on the morning show on 98 Rock. You know, what is it that you're most embarrassed about? It's usually a band, but I do love the song Mbop. As a matter of fact, when I had my website back in the day, as you were just describing, my initial comedy website, that was the song that played.
That auto played when you loaded it.
But it was so annoying because it was on a loop. And so it's like, God, people are never going to visit my page, which ended up happening anyway.
Right. They visit it and then they're like, I can't look at the show dates. Before they get any pertinent information, they've
show dates are distracting them.
Just for a reference point, up until this show was written, the 90s show was written, that website and Mbop being embedded was the number one thing that Joe is proud of. And now bumped down.
It slipped to a distant number two.
Yeah, right. There we go.
Once we created that.
You had a good run, Hanson.
All right, we got music. So, Joe, you already hinted at least some of your favorites. Movie or TV show that you think is iconic 90s that you really vibe on or think is absolute garbage, either one.
Oh, there's lots of garbage as a cynic, but I mean, Seinfeld was then, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
it'd be difficult to not have that as part of it.
Yeah.
And then I think Shawshank came out in the, in was that a 90? The year
that is 94, I think it was Shawshank.
Yeah, with Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump and all those. But I just watched Shawshank. I rewatch it every day. No, I'm just kidding. I just watched it like 3 days ago. Still cry. It still got me.
Is Shawshank Redemption a movie that's really great, or is it one of those movies that everyone thinks is great because TNT used to play it 4 times a day?
No, it's
every
great.
Day.
Yeah. No, it's certainly great, but it's also things get if everybody says that's their favorite movie, then the haters come.
Yeah.
Right. But no, it's such a great
story.
There's
a lot of rewatchables.
You hate Shawshank? What about you, Chris? What's your movie from the 90s?
I spent a lot of time in prison, so I don't really like it.
It triggers.
My favorite movie.
I thought Pulp Fiction should have won the best movie that
Pulp Fiction was great.
Went to Forrest Gump.
If I had to think of a movie that's a 90s movie that I could watch over and over and over again that is just corny, ultimate fun, probably True Lies. I worked in a movie theater.
True Lies is great.
I worked in a movie theater that summer that was out, and so I watched it a million times. And it was just one of those things where it's like it's a cool mix of corn and action and vague geopolitics and all this other sort of stuff. Yeah. Hey, the Islamic terrorists are the bad guys. Arnold's a good guy. They're flying a Harrier in downtown Miami. It had hot chicks in it. It was like, yeah, this is a 90s movie to me. I love that movie.
Tom Arnold's best movie.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Hands down.
Yeah.
Well, Soul Plane, but, you know. The other movie he was in with a plane. So, Rob, what do you think?
Well, I definitely Seinfeld. I remember liking Homicide, Life on the Street. That was a 90s show. It was like a sort of a precursor into The Wire, almost, about Baltimore.
Not much has changed.
No, I know, Baltimore. Right? Yeah. Wasn't Terminator the second one? Wasn't that 90s? Wasn't that
T2? That might have been early 90s. You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been.
I feel like that was just a. Yeah, at the time, you're like, oh, this is a peak action.
Yeah, the effects are pretty awesome. Yeah,
this is classic.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really watch the 90210, I guess a little bit, maybe, but I know that
I did, of course.
Phenomenon. Of course you did, yes.
Joe wore a lot of sweatpants, watched a lot of TV.
No, I love the rom-coms.
Yeah.
I love the movies, and I guess is She's All That from the 90s?
I think
like,
so.
Those are the kind of movies I like. I always say, if somehow I could put myself back there and I could be this and then become a hot dude and get the, you know, that's the idea. I don't mind the conflict where we fall out of love for a little while, as long as in the end, you know, me and Ione Sky, we whisk off together.
Science of the Lambs, that was a big 90s movie, wasn't it?
Early. Mm-hmm. Yep. That might have been 91, I think.
You know what bothers me? I'm sure there's been jokes written about this, about Silence of the Lambs. The guy that eats people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? His name happens to rhyme with cannibal.
Yeah. Hannibal the Cannibal, yeah.
You have a problem with that? Yeah. He happens to have a name that rhymes with cannibal. He eats people. It just seems okay.
Do you think that's what made him want to eat people?
It couldn't help. It can't be good. That's probably his nickname. You know, that's probably how they teased him. Right. And he's like, well, if that's what you're going to call me, fuck it.
I'm trying to think of words that rhyme with other horrible crimes. I can't, like, make the rapist. Like, I don't know. There's no,
Maxivator.
All right. Last question. And then we'll take it home here. Every decade has kind of iconic events that happen. We talked about it. You mentioned a couple, maybe like the Clinton thing or things like that. Is there a 90s event that really, if you're thinking, oh, this is the event of the 90s for me?
Well, it's OJ, right? For some
That's
right?
Kind of what popped into my head. OJ.
I even think about each, you know, decade where, you know, I think it might have been Reagan getting shot in the 80s and then in the 90s, OJ, and then obviously 9/11. And of course, the pandemic is this decade, but
I think it's Will Smith slapping Chris Rock.
Yeah. Well, that just happened. Let's see
for the century.
It's still fresh.
That's for the whole century. Yeah.
I mean, OJ is still the biggest thing. Like, not the biggest as in the most important, but in terms
everybody
talking about it and having
the Q score, right? No, you're right. Because even 9/11, obviously, that was, you know, that was huge, but OJ, it seems like it's never gone away. Whenever something happens now, all they got to do is just take it back to OJ. And that it's how does it compare to apples to apples to OJ? They're just talking about Deshaun Watson.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, the grand jury refused to indict him. And then, of course, I read the next comment. Well, OJ was found guilty in the 90s, but we're still talking about it. Not 25 guilty. Years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, I think Michael Jordan, that's very 90s,
you know,
the Bulls, that has to resonate as something that was from a sports, that's the biggest sports of the 90s.
I will always forever think of Michael Jordan as the Washington Wizards 2000 version. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Chicago White Sox. No. I didn't know what
Birmingham
you were
Birmingham Barons.
Say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to the first game when he was with the Wizards with other local comedian, Andy Klein. And R. Kelly saying, I believe I can fly.
And it worked out great for everyone involved.
Yes, everybody's done great since.
In retrospect, that's probably who should have sang.
Yeah. 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 The thing that shocked me, so I was Googling just 90s events before we logged on for this call. And the one thing I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely, my mind went straight to OJ. But I was also thinking, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991.
Whatever.
Like, there's OJ's not a video important. Of it. It
wasn't as big as OJ.
Yes.
If you have a time machine, you go back and save Nicole Brown. You don't worry about that other shit.
My college
the glove
English
doesn't
teacher.
Fit, you know, Soviet should not exist.
My college English teacher stopped class that day, and she was like, "Let's just go watch the O.J. verdict." I just remember that. That was just like, this is the one time that the teacher was like, "Yeah, let's just, yeah, fuck class, let's just do this." But yeah, no one ever did that.
It sort of spoiled us for, you know, every other like courtroom, like televised court.
Oh yeah,
nothing is going to come close.
Of course, all the drama, the judge and Marcia Clark and the glove and all that. Oh, so great.
I mean, it's better than any scripted Law and Order or some lawyer movie or show. It's just, it'll never happen again.
But you know
what? Of course, that's back. Yeah, I'm good.
But so, you know, it's not better than.
I was going to say, I remember.
Give me 90s one more time.
You got it. That's where I was going. Thank you.
That's back when Norm MacDonald was doing, God Rest His Soul, was doing Weekend Update. He had a million OJ jokes, but my favorite was right after the verdict, the next Weekend Update, he goes, "It's official. Murder is legal in the state of California."
What about when he talks about the guy that hated him at NBC?
Oh, Don Olmeyer?
Yeah. Don Olmeyer. Yeah. He was friends with OJ.
Hates me, but he's best friends with OJ.
Well, guys, I feel like we've mined this almost to fruition. The important thing to know is April 20th at the DC Improv, 7:30. Tickets are available at dcimprov.com. And I will give you one last chance for the elevator pitch. If anyone's not sold, if they haven't gotten their tickets yet, if they're not hovering over the click to finalize that sale, what's the pitch? We'll start with Joe. Sales pitch. Go for it.
Oh, I was going to give this to Rob. Well, like I said, even if you've never seen one of our shows, then please get out. It's something like you've never seen before. We got lucky in that I think we have the best improvisational comics that are in this area and some true geniuses. And I love working with them. And this room in particular, you know, low ceilings, it's always packed. It's a, you know, iconic venue. And we really, really destroy this room. And it's always just almost off the rails and so much fun. So, and even if you have seen even this show, yep. You come out, by the way, you know you're going to get the killer right. But other than that, you're going to see a completely different show. So, yeah, come on out.
I mean, you pretty much nailed it. But, I mean, it's if you want to solve a murder, that's great. If you want to just laugh, that's great. If you want to celebrate the 90s, that's great. If you want to do all those things, this is the perfect combination of comedy, crowd work, crowd interaction, 90s nostalgia, music, and a whodunit. We all love to solve murder. So, and it's at the DC Improv, literally maybe the greatest comedy club in the entire world. It's going to be sold out, so don't wait. It will sell out, so get those tickets.
Faint praise, but it thunders in our ears. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Chris.
See you guys in a few weeks.
Looking forward to it.
Always a good time with Rob and Joe and the whole Die Laughing crew. Hey, you know, we already freed Britney, so this is the next evolution. Hit me 90s one more time. That is at the DC Improv on April 20th, a Wednesday night. Again, always a lot of fun, so get over to dcimprov.com and score yourself some tickets. And with all that said, I think that's enough free show for the week. Hey, big thanks to Rob Mayer, to Joe Robinson, and to Jack Knight, all who took the time to call in and chat with us. Our thanks to you at home for taking the time to listen. It'd be kind of weird if you did a podcast and no one showed up. We couldn't do it without you. And hey, we would love to see you at the club April 20th, the 23rd, whether you're checking out Jack, whether you're checking out Die Laughing Productions. But however you're spending that week, we sincerely hope you're spending part of it laughing. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on the other side. I'm Chris White.